International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, an analyst speaks with us about the importance of the nuclear summit. We'll hear about a deadly bridge collapse in India, a look at the threat from the Zika virus to the southern U.S., and one of the people responsible for turning EDM into a billion-dollar industry is retiring.
Avicii has been plagued with health problems starting in January of 2012, when he was hospitalized for 11 days with acute pancreatitis reportedly brought on by heavy drinking.
It's right here on The Voice of America. President Obama is hosting a fourth nuclear security summit in Washington. The two-day meeting has brought together world leaders from more than 50 nations on ways to better safeguard nuclear materials. On the eve of the summit, Mr. Obama, in an opinion piece in the Washington Post, said the most dangerous threat to global security and peace is the proliferation and potential use of nuclear weapons. He said the central pillar of the summit will be to prevent terrorists from obtaining and using a nuclear weapon. The president made nuclear security a key foreign policy priority of his administration soon after taking office in 2009 in a landmark speech in Prague. He said the U.S. and Russia, which together hold more than 90% of the world's nuclear weapons, should negotiate to reduce their stockpiles further. Moscow is skipping this year's event. White House spokesman Josh Earnest Wednesday said Russia was instrumental in helping to reach a nuclear agreement with Iran last year.
A large percentage, 98% of their stockpile of highly enriched uranium was shipped out of the country and was secured. That's a good example. When you have this dangerous material in such large quantities, it enhances the risk of proliferation. The other thing that we know is that Iran supports terrorism. There's no denying that as well. That's why there are a variety of ways in which our national security was significantly enhanced by reaching an agreement to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, but also to ensure and verify that their nuclear program was dedicated to specifically peaceful purposes, but also to ensure that Iran had the appropriate protocols in place to protect the nuclear material that they did retain.
Earnest said the three previous nuclear summits in Washington in 2010, Seoul in 2012, and The Hague in 2014 resulted in 13 countries plus Taiwan eliminating their stockpiles of highly enriched uranium. Nicholas Roth is a research associate at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University. He is attending the nuclear summit and discussed with VOA's Victor Beatty the importance of the meeting.
For the last 6 years, countries around the world have come together, dozens of countries, focused on the effort to secure nuclear weapons material around the world. Every 2 years, there have been summits where countries have made pledges to strengthen their own security. They've shared information about how they would do that. These summits have elevated the issue of strengthening nuclear security around the world. And at this summit, which will be the final summit, it's essential that countries agree to a plan that continues strengthening nuclear security without summits in place. At this year's summit, countries are going to agree to 5 action plans that will focus on sustaining nuclear security efforts through a variety of different organizations. And it's essential that coming out of this summit, that countries have a roadmap on how to go forward, that countries make concrete commitments to strengthening nuclear security in their own countries, but also that there is a path forward.
Is one of the big issues the fact that terror groups like Islamic State could obtain a so-called dirty bomb?
The issue of the threat is a very important one. 2 years ago, at the Nuclear Security Summit, essentially no one had ever heard of the Islamic State. Within months of the 2014 Nuclear Security Summit, they had declared a global caliphate. And what we've seen over the last 2 years is that while there's no solid evidence that a group like the Islamic State is pursuing nuclear weapons capability, if they did so, they have land, they have resources, they have global outreach, they have apocalyptic ideology, and they've demonstrated that they're capable of carrying out sophisticated attacks around the world. So if they decided to go down that route, they have as much capability as any terrorist group in history to do so. And I think that really highlights the speed at which threats can change and the need for securing nuclear material.
Nicholas, what about rogue states like North Korea and its pursuit of nuclear weapons, as well as states that seem to be failing or having great difficulty that are already nuclear armed, like Pakistan?
There are a number of countries that are of significant concern with regard to nuclear security. In a recent report that I helped co-author, we talk about three countries in particular: Russia, Pakistan, and India. And there are a number of very specific threats that all countries should guard against in terms of threats, insider threats, outsider threats involving more than one group of people, having a robust security culture. And it's important that organizations with nuclear materials and nuclear facilities are prepared to protect against those threats, but also that they understand them as well.
And Nicholas Roth says there is no question in his mind the world is safer today from the threat of nuclear terrorism than it was when the first of these summits was held. Time for a look at what's going on the web today concerning this story. And joining me here at the Anchor Desk with details is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Sue. Well, hashtag nuclear summit is trending as people look to this nuclear summit. And looking at a lot of the players that are attending, a lot of big names, the prime ministers of Canada, the United Kingdom, Italy, Spain, South Korea, India. So these really huge names. And so people are noticing that in D.C. They're tweeting about the traffic, about some of the military vehicles they're seeing, some of the checkpoints people are having to go through, saying that this is really heavy security.
A lot of streets closed, a lot of detours.
Absolutely. So it's kind of tying up D.C. A lot of other people saying, I'm glad because I get to telework today. So they lucked out. But there's also a lot of talk about who isn't there, namely Russia and Pakistan. People saying these are two major nuclear powers. In fact, according to one graphic I saw tweeted out by the Arms Control Association, Russia has the most nuclear warheads or suspected nuclear warheads, 7,700 of any country in the world. So people saying it's very glaring that Russia is not attending this summit, and they're wondering if that's going to have an impact on some of the policy discussions and if it can be applied to Russia after the summit happens.
Mm-hmm. And we have another story going on today, which in a moment or two we're going to have more information about, and that's a horrible bridge collapse today in India.
Yes, in Kolkata, at least 14 people now are reported dead after a flyover or an overpass collapsed in that city. Already people starting the blame game, saying, well, it's the government's fault, it's poor infrastructure. But other people quickly shooting back on social media, saying, let's work on recovering the victims. There are a lot of people who are allegedly trapped in this wreckage, so they're trying to find those people and rescue them as quickly as they can.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Andrew. Appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Since 1988, astronomers have found over 2,000 exoplanets, or planets, outside of our solar system. To help spot these planets, scientists have used a number of technologies, such as the Kepler Space Telescope. Now, NASA is moving on to an even newer and more sophisticated instrument for planet hunting. This new cutting-edge device is called NEID, short for NN Explorer Exoplanet Investigations with Doppler Spectroscopy. The instrument will spot the extrasolar planets by measuring the tiny wobbling of stars. NEID is part of a planned planet-searching partnership between the space agency and the National Science Foundation. The device will be built by Penn State researchers and is expected to be completed in 2019. It will be installed on a telescope at the Kitt Peak National Observatory in Arizona. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
A bridge under construction has collapsed in eastern India, leaving many people dead or missing. On the line with us from New Delhi is reporter Anjana Pasricha. Welcome, Anjana.
Hello, Susan. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. And you?
Yes, I'm good, except for this bad news that we have from the east of India in this city called Kolkata.
Yes, what happened?
Well, you know, there was this road bridge, which was under construction in a very, very busy area, in a crowded area in the old part of the city, which is in the north part of the city. This bridge had been under construction for several years. It had missed several deadlines. What happened this afternoon is that a massive 100-meter-long cement and metal structure apparently snapped and came crashing down, trapping a lot of people. As you said, several killed. So the rescue operations are currently on.
Well, tell me, what sort of search and rescue is underway? Do they have equipment, or are they searching by hand?
No. They do have equipment. They've moved in earth-moving vehicles. They've moved in cranes. They have to try to remove this massive, you know, cement and metal structure that has collapsed. It's not going to be an easy task. It's a crowded area. But while they have all this equipment, the army has moved in, the police has moved in. There are a lot of civilians also, people, ordinary people who are trying to help, which usually happens in India. You know, people rush to such a scene, and they're trying to sort of rescue the people who are trapped underneath. I mean, we have pretty bad stories of somebody, a mangled hand. They're trying to pass bottles of water around. But yes, there are disaster relief personnel who are trying to supervise the entire operation.
What is this area of the country like?
This is a very, very crowded area. As it is one of India's crowded metropolises. It's one of the four main cities, extremely crowded. And this is one of the most crowded areas of Kolkata. There are small, tiny shops around. There are houses which go back 150 years. And it is just actually building a bridge there. It was a pretty ambitious project. In first place, it is that crowded.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with us, Anjana, from New Delhi.
Thank you, Susan.
Coming up on International Edition, protecting yourself from the Zika virus. And Avicii is retiring. The World Health Organization says 47 nations are reporting transmission of the Zika virus, and the WHO says there is increasing evidence the disease is linked to two neurological disorders, microcephaly, which causes brain abnormalities in babies, and Guillain-Barré syndrome, which may result in paralysis. Correspondent Carol Pearson is tracking whether the virus will take root in the United States and joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, where does the danger stand?
Well, the coastal United States is now getting ready for perhaps some Zika transmissions. I mean, the coastal United States, the southern area along the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico and coastal Florida, they have these warm tropical kinds of climates, ideal breeding situations for the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which can carry the Zika virus. Plus, that kind of mosquito already lives in this area. Doesn't mean that the mosquito necessarily carries the virus, but it can carry it if it's infected, if it bites an infected person.
Well, what can be done about the threat?
Right now, even the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases says, don't get bitten. And
well, that's easier said than done.
Right, especially in the summertime, because in this area, the population of mosquitoes goes way up starting in May, and it doesn't begin to subside until maybe September. So they have to make an awareness campaign for people, because a lot of people don't know much about this virus or the mosquito. You have to wear mosquito repellent. You have to wear long sleeves. And the problem is, they have a lot of poor people in this area, and they are just as poor as some of the people in Latin America. They don't have access to maybe air conditioning. It's not expected to be a big problem in the United States because of air conditioning, but a lot of these people don't have it. They might not be able to afford mosquito repellent. It's a major problem, and hospitals are already getting calls about the Zika virus and what do I do.
And also there's the issue of cleaning up.
Yeah, you have to get rid of all the debris. And in poor areas, that's really hard. People live very close to each other. These mosquitoes can breed in 1 milliliter of water, you know, enough water that lines the rim of a flower pot. You have to get rid of all that stuff. You have to get rid of old tires. Anything that can hold a little bit of water, you have to get rid of it.
What about funding for doing all this?
The Obama administration asked Congress to appropriate $1.9 billion. That's really the first down payment on this Zika control. But Congress has not yet done it. And time is getting really short. The Centers for Disease Control, they say that they're counting every dime. They don't have excess money, they say. The National Institutes of Health also says they don't have excess money. And during the recession in 2008 and 2009, the states public health programs were slashed, and they have not yet recovered. So they're counting on some kind of money from Congress.
You know, there doesn't seem to be as much concern for the Zika virus as there was for, say, Ebola. And do you think they're handling this virus better than the Ebola crisis was handled?
Well, the World Health Organization stepped in very fast, and so did the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But in some ways, this virus is even scarier than Ebola. It doesn't have, you know, that horror associated with it that Ebola has of blood coming out of orifices. And by the way, not everybody had that. However, what it does do, especially for infants, is it can cause a whole panoply of birth defects that last a lifetime. So that is the horror of Zika.
What about how the officials are handling it? Do you think it's been pretty good compared to the way they handled Ebola?
There is still a certain amount of fear, but I think that what's needed most is information. And in terms of how to handle it, you need money. You need money for educational campaigns. You need money to try to help people, especially poor people, avoid getting bitten. And it's a real threat for pregnant women or women who become pregnant because it can affect you, research shows, anywhere along the pregnancy. And in later stages, it causes the placenta to shrink and can cause stillbirths. And they still don't know what percentage of these children will be born with any kind of birth defects.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Carol, for stopping by.
You're welcome.
This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
Will virtual reality be the next new world in high-tech gaming? Yes, if Oculus gets its way. Oculus recently released its much-anticipated virtual reality system, the Oculus Rift. Palmer Luckey designed the first Rift headset in his mother's garage.
Put it on and it actually feels like you're in this virtual space, like you've left the real world entirely.
Palmer sold the Oculus to Facebook for $2 billion a couple of years ago. Now Facebook's VR system is on the market for a hefty $600. $600 for the headset and related gear is not all you'll need. You'll also need a powerful Windows PC. Peter Brown is editor of the video gaming website, GameSpot.
The Oculus Rift is powered by a high-end gaming PC. It requires something that costs at least around $1,000.
So if you have an older PC, you may have to upgrade. And remember, Google's Cardboard VR headset is only $15. Also remember, you get what you pay for. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grosshans.
Fans of electronic dance music, or EDM, were shocked to learn that Swedish DJ Avicii is retiring at age 26. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, one of the people responsible for turning EDM into a billion-dollar industry says 2016 will be his last year touring. So wake me up.
Best known for his 2014 smash hit Wake Me Up, Avicii, born Tim Berling in Sweden, said that this would be his last year on the road. In a lengthy letter posted on his Facebook page, the 26-year-old told fans that a recent trip across the United States with some friends helped him to see things in a new way. He said the trip helped him realize it was time to step away from touring. Avicii has been plagued with health problems starting in January of 2012 when he was hospitalized for 11 days with acute pancreatitis reportedly brought on by heavy drinking. The condition flared again in 2013 and he had to cancel several live shows and was hospitalized again in Australia. In 2014, Avicii was forced to cancel a series of performances in Miami because of illness and had to have surgery to remove a burst appendix and his gallbladder. The Swedish-born DJ told the Associated Press that the time he had to take off from touring helped him realize that a life change was needed.
Went to the studio and I did that, and I was like 20 kilos thinner, and I was like, I look like a skeleton and like still jumping into the studio, you know. But then I kind of realized that I just had to take some time and just focus on me and just kind of getting back in shape, getting back in, like, both physically and mentally, and, you know, try to set up a, like, a long-term plan for all of this, which is, I think, what we did.
Hey, brother, there's an endless road to rediscover. Hey, sister.
In his letter to fans, Avicii did not say that his health was the main reason for his retirement. He said his choices and career have never been driven by material things, but he is grateful for his success. He also spent a lot of time thanking people, especially his fans. Avicii told the AP that after taking some time off, he feels restored, even better than he felt before he started touring.
If I look back to me before I started touring, you know, I feel better now, which is weird to me. That's all thanks to, like, exercise and to all the people around me who's, like, really helped me out a lot. I'm addicted to you!
In his letter, Avicii said that he will never let go of music. He will continue to speak to my fans through it. He also hinted at a possible return, saying, I could be back, but I won't be right back. And in a unique turn, the DJ said he has a new phone and gave fans the number to text him about all this. However, he did ask fans to bear with him because I might not be super quick to reply. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than 70 people were killed and more than 300 injured in a suicide bombing in a crowded park in Lahore, Pakistan, on Easter Sunday. Most of those killed were women and children. State Department spokesperson John Kirby condemned in the strongest terms the appalling terrorist attack in the eastern province of Punjab. Jamaat-ul-Ahrar, a splinter group of the Pakistani Taliban, has claimed responsibility for the attack, which they say was directed at Pakistani Christians. Though in the aftermath, it has become clear more Muslims than Christians lost their lives in the attack. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif vowed to eradicate extremist ideologies from Pakistan after the Easter Sunday bombing. Our goal is not only to eliminate terror infrastructure, but also the extremist mindset, which is a threat to our way of life, Sharif said in a statement. We must take this war to the doors of the terrorist outfits before they are able to hit our innocent countrymen. Jamaat-ul-Ahrar has claimed responsibility for several big attacks in the past 2 years. It has previously carried out at least 2 major attacks in Lahore, one in 2015 that targeted 2 Christian churches, and another at the Wagah border between India and Pakistan in late 2014. Of Pakistan's 190 million people, approximately 1.5% of the total population is Christian, according to the latest census. But it is a community that has been targeted by extremist groups before. For example, in 2013, a suicide bombing at a church in Peshawar left more than 100 people dead, and a series of attacks at churches in Lahore left 14 dead. Attacks like these only deepen our shared resolve to defeat terrorism around the world, said spokesperson Kirby. And we will continue to work with our partners in Pakistan and across the region to combat the threat of terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.